the move, going deep, speed race. He's got Hill! He's got Hill!
From the Baptist Health Studios, inside the Baptist Health Training Complex, this is Drive Time with Travis Wingfield.
He's got it! Miami is in the playoffs!
What is up, Dolphins, and welcome to the Drive Time Podcast. I am your host, Travis Wingfield, and on today's show, we are covering the next two picks of your Miami Dolphins. We have five more players to break down. We'll do players three through five on the next episode, but today, running back Jalen Wright, outside backer, edge defender Mohamed Kamara from Tennessee and Colorado State, respectively. We'll dive into the film there on those guys. We'll take a look at the fit and the advanced metrics as we do here on this podcast. We'll hear from the players as well as Mike McDaniel and Chris Greer from the Baptist Health Studios inside the Baptist Health Training Complex. This is the Drive Time Podcast. We got things started on Saturday with some fireworks, both with a trade-up and the player selection. The Dolphins parlayed next year's organic third-round draft choice. You cannot dip into the compensatory picks just yet. You can trade them down the road, but not just yet. They have to lock in after the season's over. And they got themselves back into the fourth round to select an electric tailback in Tennessee's Jalen Wright. That's our second J-A-Y-L-E-N Jalen, and our fourth overall Jalen. Five best rappers of all time, Dylon. Before we get to that, though, real quick, we heard from both Mike McDaniel and Chris Greer. Let's go ahead and hear what they believe they achieved on day number three in the 2024 NFL Draft.
I think we feel like we've added good football players, guys that, you know, we had targeted at positions we felt good about to contribute, guys that we feel have upside, and again, the most important that we always talk about, competitive guys that love ball and that won't blink coming in here and will jump into the fray and be good teammates, and it'll be fun watching these guys battle it out during training camp.
And we'll talk about this as we go along in the podcast here, but all five players the Dolphins added on day three across the board unanimously have a certain competitive spirit and toughness about them. And you read about that in all the scouting or the draft guides, all the anonymous scout quotes from around the league. All that stuff kind of points to a certain type of player, which we know the Dolphins covet down here in Miami. How much does this draft help the team win in 2024? That was an important question and an important answer. Here's Chris Greer on just that.
We always feel that way, but it remains to be seen. Like, no one's given anything, you know, here. We have some good players on the roster here, and these guys are going to have to work to beat them out and earn spots. But, we selected them because we feel that they have a chance to contribute. But, again, they have to earn it. Nothing's given. And I think Mike and the staff have shown that over their 2 years here, that you earn your playing time here.
We are going to get to the rest of the picks on Monday's podcast. Malik Washington and Patrick McMorris, and then we haven't actually made the final pick yet. I'm recording the podcast ahead of time, trying to get it out to you guys right at the conclusion of this draft, but I'll go ahead and fill you in at the end of the podcast and who that is. I'm sure you know you're listening to the Draft Time Podcast and you don't know the draft picks. I mean, there's no way you're a podcast fan who doesn't know the Dolphins' entire draft class so far, but we'll update you guys at the end of the podcast for posterity's sake. And of course, we have the expectation, you know, going back to the Jalen Wright move to trade up into the fourth round of this year's draft, we have the expectation of third-round comp picks coming back next year. It always seemed to me like that cabinet of future third-round picks was a good resource pool to dip into to go up and get a player they might like in this range of the draft. I'm surprised they pulled it off without giving up any picks this year, and so you add a pick this year when you only had six going in, so seven total players from the class, from a draft pool in 2025, where with the projected pick in each of the seven rounds, plus your three comp picks you're projected to get, had 10 picks. So now it's 7 and 9 in the next back-to-back years after a couple of years of 4 and 5 picks in the draft. So Miami getting more and more rookies, filling out that pipeline deeper and deeper to kind of continue the idea of sustained success down the road while you also compete and win now. We'll come back to that topic here in just a second here in the podcast as well. And speaking of all of that, before we get to the analysis on Tennessee running back Jalen Wright, here is Chris Greer on the flexibility those third-round picks gave the Dolphins in this year's draft.
You can't use the compensatory picks until this time next year. So those the ones we anticipated were all protected. But it gave us some flexibility to move around, as we talked about us being active, trying to move up in the draft previously. But for us, we had Jalen in on a visit here, 30 visit, enjoyed spending time with him here. We spent a lot of time getting to know him. And obviously, you know, his explosiveness on the field and what he does as a running back, his toughness again, it's another guy that, you know, when Mike started really watching him, he was excited for, you know, as well as our scouts identifying him. So, again, it was the ability to add a good football player. And everything's about competition. It's a good group of guys. They understand that. So for us to add a good football player that we really liked and valued there on the board was an opportunity we couldn't pass.
I knew it. I knew that was going to happen. That's part of the draw of being so particular about protecting those compensatory picks with players that were cut, with signing contracts under the threshold that would qualify towards a compensatory formula. I thought it was kind of a masterstroke in terms of how this was managed, because those third-round picks, yeah, they're valuable top 100 picks to get players on your roster, but the ability to be flexible with how they could give you that ammunition to go up in this year's draft or next year's draft, it's so valuable to me. Part of that with, you know, losing the key parts we did lose in Christian Wilkins and Robert Hunt and Andrew Van Ginkel, replacing those guys with aggregate number of players and cheaper players and maybe some draft picks down the road, but also the idea of just creating more flexibility in the draft to give yourself the opportunity to identify a player you love and go up and get them, there's value to all of that. So it's not just lost X, didn't gain Z. Like, there's a lot more nuance that goes into it than that. And I thought Miami did a good job of managing that and massaging what would ultimately become an additional draft pick that did not cost them any future picks in this year's draft, just in next year's draft. So we move on now to the 20th pick of the fourth round, number 120 overall, Tennessee running back Jalen Wright. And wouldn't you know it, another player who was absolutely dying to come to Miami.
I had a 30 visit with Miami. I met the whole staff. It was cool. I mean, that was a team I really wanted to go to, which is crazy. It's the best visit I had. You know, I'm just glad, you know what I'm saying, just to have the opportunity to, you know what I'm saying, come out in South Beach, you know, just to help make a difference in the team, you know, help add that explosive element.
So I plugged on the film of Jalen Wright. I watched him live this year, but didn't do tape on him until today, because full transparency, the shortcut that I took, or one of them this year's draft class, was at the running back position. And that's why you never do that, because you never, ever know what could possibly happen in the draft. And so I pull up the all 22 from the Georgia game, and on the very first snap, the Volunteers go duo. And what duo is double teams from two players, or there's two double teams, I should say, on the offensive line, one isolation block. And then from there, you catch and climb to the second level and try to get up to the second level to hit secondary blocks to spring your back into that second level of the defense. And from there, they had split flow action, which is the tight end going across the formation against the flow of the zone or the blocking scheme you have inside. And that's something Miami does tons and tons of. And you can often look like those plays can often look like inside zone. Something else the Dolphins do a whole heck of a lot of here under head coach Mike McDaniel. And Georgia's in man coverage in the corner running across the formation with the split flow tight end blocker over pursues this gap. And there's this massive window for Wright to step into. And he does just that. But it's not just stepping into that gap. What I love about his running style is that he presses this hole and forces the cornerback to be late on the decision, or just have the information as late as he possibly can, because he doesn't know which way he's going to cut because of pressing that hole. And I love that he's able to draw that cornerback inside and get a false step downhill from the last line of the defense, the post safety in this case, which creates a poor angle and an opening play 75-yard touchdown to start the game against the team, the number one team in the entire country. So very impressed by all of that. And speaking of, show them your tail lights type of speed, how about this? Wright scored a 9.75 on his relative athletic scorecard out of 10 points. That's basically measuring all the measurements at the scouting combine in your pro day, and he's nearly perfect in the athletic measurements in that regard. It's 44th going back to 36 years of NFL scouting combines. That's out of over 1,700 running backs. He's 44th overall, and his 11-foot-2 broad jump was the second longest ever by a running back. Explosive, explosive player. But how about this? You know, we called Devon Achane Flat Stanley on the podcast last year, and I can't take credit for that because somebody else mentioned it on Twitter. I forgot who it was, but I think it's perfect because of his ability to hit tiny creases and explode through the other side unfazed. It's not that dissimilar for Jalen Wright and his skill set that he features. He told us that the fastest speed he ever recorded on GPS was 23.7 miles per hour. Let me say that again for effect. 23.7 miles per hour. 22.3 was the fastest NFL speed last year. Tyreek's fastest was 22.01, and Achane's was 21.93. This dude can flat out scoot. And he's also incredibly patient while also gaining ground towards the line of scrimmage. He knows how to press and scrape, almost like a linebacker who does the exact same thing on the other side of the ball. They want to get in tight to the blocker in front of them that's stacked up in a engage in a block and stay in tight to that so they can scrape off of that block and not catch the blocker on a catch and climb or a double team. He does the same things like a running back or like a linebacker does at the running back position. And a lot of the runs for big gains were him hitting a gap and just running past guys in close quarters, getting off of those arm tackles. So he has the power and strength requisite to hit those explosive runs in those tight areas. He reminds me a bit of Raheem Mostert in the way he blazes past guys and the way this run game springs runs where it's basically, here's some space, use your speed and your vision and your urgency and your decision making to go hit it at full speed, make guys miss at the second and third level. That's Jalen Wright's entire game. What a fun tape this was to watch, man. He also had 22 catches, and this is where I like pairing him with Tua because Tennessee would scheme up these quick throws like rail routes or flat routes or flares or swings where they would just flare it out to him on a dead sprint and essentially get him on the perimeter but via the passing game. And that also crosses over with the screen game. And Tua is so damn adept at putting the ball on the upfield shoulder right in line to keep you moving that you don't want to slow a guy like Jalen Wright down. I don't think that that's going to be a problem for Tua at any point with this player. The fit with the Dolphins is fantastic because if you go to Sports Info Solutions, the ultimate statistical website, the Dolphins' fast 21 personnel grouping, which is two backs, one tight end, but typically in that grouping, it's a running back and a fullback. Fast 21 means it's two halfbacks, two tailbacks, two running backs, Achane and Mostert, or Achane and Wright. And that package last year for the Dolphins, albeit not ran with a great abundance of frequency, was the most productive at over 7 yards per play when they had that grouping on the field. That was largely Mostert and Achane together. And of course, we had several games where one of those guys was not available. So now with Jalen Wright, you protect your most productive grouping in the event that you don't have Mostert or Achane for a game or even, you know, knock on wood, an extended period of time. He had more runs, Wright did, with five or fewer defenders in the box than he did seven plus. And that's what you're going to get down here with the speed we have on the perimeter. And that's because the Tennessee offense, much like Miami, stretched the field as well as anybody the last 2 years, especially 2 years ago when they had Jalin Hyatt, I think third-round pick of the New York Giants. Well, you know who's faster than the Tennessee Volunteers? The Miami Dolphins. From the same grouping in the passing game, his speed to stretch the defense, but also the presences you have that can occupy that space in the middle of the field where Tua excels as much as any quarterback in the NFL, right? The middle of the field. Now you've got multiple angle/Texas route options, guys that can widen the linebacker and cross face and hit big plays on short passes over the middle. You have a tried and true productive spot-up tight end, as it were, in Jonnu Smith. And then you know how Tyreek and Waddle stress in the middle of the field as well. I'm so pumped for this. Let's go ahead and hear from Jalen Wright on how his time in Knoxville at Tennessee and the versatility they had there prepared him for coming to the NFL in one of the more diverse, complex running systems under Mike McDaniel in the National Football League.
Especially my sophomore year, junior year, I mean, we had receivers to space out the field. I mean, that's just something that Dolphins do really good. You know, just space out the field, you know, get defenses to get out of cover one and cover three, you know, get defenses to play cover two and cover four. I mean, it's just going to create bigger opportunities for the running backs, bigger explosive plays. I had a lot of things like that happen in Tennessee, and I feel like that's going to be good in Miami. So
let's go ahead and pause right there, take our first break of this episode, come back and talk about new Dolphins running back Jalen Wright more on the other side. We're also going to talk about Mohamed Kamara, the edge from Colorado State, and give you some more general draft thoughts. We'll hear more from McDaniel and Chris Greer, including how they feel this year's class has nothing to do with, or not nothing to do with, is all about winning this year and the idea of being a sustained winner for a long time. All of that and more next here on the Drive Time Podcast. Your host, Travis Wingfield, brought to you by AutoNation.
Hey guys, this is Matt Jones, Drew Franklin from the Fade This podcast. We got a great episode coming up, picks in all the sports, football, basketball, we do them all, but here's a preview of this week's episode. Do you think it's more embarrassing to dye your hair or to have hair plugs?
I don't think either are embarrassing if you're not trying to conceal it and act like you didn't.
Okay, so you think if you just come out and go, I got hair plugs.
Yeah, like check out these hair plugs. I mean, don't just walk around, hey, tapping, hey, stranger, I don't want you thinking this is natural. You know, but I mean,
do you have to do that with everyone you meet?
Some people try to act like they, you know what I mean.
Yeah, but I mean, like John Cena got him. You know, when John Cena came back to wrestling, he had a bald spot, and now he doesn't. Mm-hmm. You think he should be required in all interviews to say, look, by the way, I covered up my bald spot?
Yeah, I guess it's weird. I mean, you don't wear a sign or like put a sign in your yard, but.
All right. So what about toupees?
Those are the most obvious.
But let's say you're like Bill Self and you can get it to where it looks good.
His is magical. I don't even know if his is a toupee.
It is.
I think he went into the future and had a procedure we haven't even discovered yet.
And this episode was brought to you in partnership with DraftKings. To hear more, listen and subscribe to Fade This on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Picking it back up here, recapping the first two picks of day three of the 2024 NFL Draft for your Miami Dolphins. We're talking about new running back Jalen Wright. And from Pro Football Focus, here's what their scouting report read. I forget who the lead draft analyst is there now, but his calling card is his explosiveness. His first step, lateral or linear, is eye-popping. He pairs that with the NFL-level top gear to eat up open space. Good hands as a receiver, and his explosiveness makes him a sharp route runner. He was one of the best backs in the country in pass protection due to his size and strength. What's the hang-up here, guys? I'm not saying you guys have one, but like three-down player, pass pro, pass game, physical, home run speed. What's not to like? The data on him. PFF had him in the 98th and 96th percentile in zone running game grade and gap running game grade. Those are the two schemes you run, man and gap, or man and zone, I should say. I mean, what did we say about scheme versatility? How about a 92 percentile in average yards after contact as well? That 4.35 yards after contact on average was third in college football last season. He hit 10-plus yard runs on 24.8% of his runs. That was tops in college football. He forced 43 missed tackles last season. That was tied for 30th among backs in college football. We know this team can run to the perimeter, but here's a crazy one for you guys, and this might satisfy some of the what are you going to do on third and one situations or the power game. Here are Jalen Wright's attempts and yards per gap in 2023. We know the gaps are the A gap is the one between the center and guard, the B gap between the guard and tackle, and the C gap between the tackle and tight end and runs on the perimeter. The D gap beyond that is the wide outside run. So in the A gap, right down the middle, 50 rushes for 498 yards, round up to 2 yards to give him 500. It's 10 yards per rush on inside zone and duo. That's a great counterpunch to Miami's outside zone running game with Achane and Mostert. It's fantastic. B gap, 28 for 118. It's not eye-popping, but it's still over 4 yards per rush. C gap, 26 for 198. That's up to about 8 yards per rush, a little bit less than that. And off the perimeter, 32 for 196. So he can run it everywhere, but gosh, those big home run wins on the inside. Just continue to look at the way the Dolphins have built this offense in 2024. They're going to stress even more space than they did in 2023, in my opinion. He's just 21 years old, only 1 year as a full-time starter and significant workload. In fact, he has under 300 touches, or 400 touches, I should say, as a collegian. So plenty of tread on the tires. Everybody loves his pass pro and receiving game in terms of scouts and expert analysis out there, which means he offers true three-down ability. And if he hits with Devon Achane, you could arguably have one of the game's most dynamic 1-2 punches down the road, maybe in 2025, and you're going to have Achane for 2 more years and Wright for 3 more years on mid-round rookie contracts, essentially minimum type of cash you owe those players. You can get away from having to really pay running backs anything and have two of the best. Like, if that works out that way, like, sign me up, dude. Dane Brugler wrote this about his ability to cut away from pursuit angles at full speed to create missed tackles is more impressive than his track speed. At 5'10.5", 210 pounds, really good size for a back, especially at that speed. He had a compact build and muscular frame. 6.2 yards per rush career on 400 touches, or a little bit less than 400 touches. 7.4 yards per carry last season as the starter, and he had 3 runs of 50-plus yards, all touchdowns. If there's one thing to clean up, It's the ball security. Five fumbles over the last 2 years, and Wright told us he wanted to be here. Patrick Paul told us the exact same thing. Chop Robinson was stoked to be here. Kamara was fired up. Malik Washington said he cannot wait to join the best wide receiver room in all of football. So I asked Mike McDaniel and Chris Greer, like, it seems obvious the benefit here, but can you guys, in your perspective, tell us the benefit of guys that want to be here? And I think this answer speaks to what the organization has done to put this sanctuary in place that attracts not just draft prospects, but players around the league. Agents are aware of how beloved this place is. Here's Chris Greer and Mike McDaniel on guys wanting to play for Miami.
No, I think our whole point has been trying to create some place that's is a winning culture, winning environment, the place that players want to come to play and win and be developed. And, you know, it all starts at the top from Steve Ross and what he's done here with the facilities and everything he's provided us. You know, the multiple agents and players, even in the free agency process, or the pros had mentioned being the number one in the NHL, I'm thinking of my brother, sorry. NFLPA.
This is a great family.
Rankings about being number one and everything. So, and that's been brought up multiple times just from people that are paying attention to what they're doing. And I think Mike deserves a lot of credit for the environment that's been created here by the coaching staff, you know, and what they've done and how they've handled players and the development they've done. So, yeah, it's cool. We've had, like you guys heard, John, who, when he signed here, said it was Hard Knocks he watched, and it was, he thought it was cool watching, seeing how close the players were and everything we did. So yeah, it's important, and I think it's, when you hear players that want to come play here and do it, I think it says a lot for Mike and what the coaching staff have got, as well as Mr. Ross.
It was kind of revitalizing too, in terms of just today, the last couple days, you know, each and every player that we talked to, the emotional exuberance, and you could feel the passion in every single one of these guys' voices. It was pretty cool. So I think that speaks to you know, what you guys are going to be presented with when you're in front of those guys in the near future.
Then the Dolphins come back a round later with pick 158 overall, the 23rd selection in the fifth round, and they go right back to the edge spot with Colorado State's Muhammad Kamara. And he goes by Mo. And when the Dolphins came into this draft, we knew about 2 and 15, you know, Chubb and Phillips and Shaq Barrett. We knew about Cam Good as really the only depth slash developmental guy on the roster who also has experienced snaps. I mean, you know, Quentin Bell and Zeke Vanderberg, like, you know, you might think highly of them, but they haven't played in the NFL and we don't know what they are. We needed some replenishment of the youth at that position, not to mention coming off a playoff game where you played with three street free agents who were having the damn opposition in the locker room after the game. Like, that always really pissed me off, and I never wanted to have to do that again. So that's kind of what I'm thinking here with this. In fact, we had depth and or attrition problems. I guess they kind of go together at edge, O-line, and running back, and receiver, and that's all we drafted this year, wasn't it? I mean, come on. And now you've hit, well, safety as well. We had Patrick McMorris was a draft pick as well. But now you've hit all those spots. You've hit edge twice, receiver twice in this class. And let's go ahead and get to know Muhammad Kamara. He's 6'1 and a half, a little bit less than 6'1 and a half. He's 6'013 and 248 pounds. So he's very short for an edge rusher. In fact, he's in the 5 percentile of height for outside linebackers. 4.57 40 yard dash is cooking. A 1.57-10 split. That number falls just short of Chop Robinson's 1.54 10 split, which that number never fails. You have to have a good 10 split to play in Miami. But 34 and a half inch vert, 10'3" broad. The film on him, a quick film watch, because I didn't have a chance to put his tape on this draft process, as is kind of the case for the day three guys, although I did watch Malik Washington because I was a big fan of his game. But the first thing that stands out is him just crawling out of his skin, fired up to play. He's like pulling at his chin straps. He's like slapping his face mask. He's just on 10 all the time. And that matches his first step. Again, the 10 split time shows up on the very first rep you watch this guy play. The speed and explosiveness has conversion ability into power. He loves that bull rush move, and he can kind of get caught a little bit with the short arms or the lack of a counter move to run that bull rush. But we talked about how Chop Robinson can really flatten an angle to the quarterback once you run the arc. This guy does that so well and his urgency off the line forces early declarations and forces the offensive line to be right with their sets, with their punches, with their redirect, with their slides. It just creates urgency on the offensive line. He played, Kamara did, a combination of stand-up and then also 3 and 4 point stances and more of a 6 technique opposed to the out-wide 9 technique. He played both weak and strong side. You see that first quick step, but also the ability to slip off blocks with a spin move, with a swipe, or just a lateral step that allows him to attack half the man and not get glued to the block. I do think he gets glued to blocks a little bit too much, but there's reps out there where he gets off those initial blocks. And just like Chop Robinson, he flattens the quarterback so well. Watching these college tight ends try to get a piece of him when they help a tackle, like, it never happens. He's so good with the crossover step and the cross face of a tackle and slice inside of that B gap and reduce that edge and basically take the tackle out of that gap. I get the feeling that Weaver and Crow and Clark watch this guy and think, man, we can get some production out of him from running games, from having him dent the edge and then loop a defensive tackle back around the outside, maybe a T.R. Tartan, all of his explosiveness, and get a free run on a shortened angle to the quarterback for a guy like T.R. Tart. He had a rep against Boise where he splits a double team. The running back steps up and chips him, and it actually gets him to the ground. Like he loses his balance and falls to the ground. But I've never seen a human being pop up off the ground faster and fast. He gets up off the ground so quick that he goes in and clobbers the quarterback, looking like one of the infected in I Am Legend going after Will Smith. Like, he has that type of urgency to the way he runs down guys from the backside. He's very adept at getting tackles to overset wide and then stab back inside, where he kind of gets that hand and grabs a jersey full and then uses the momentum to pull himself through and get inside that B gap. Now, you're going to hear about him being undersized, but to me, that's more about his height. And the lack of height sometimes gives you natural leverage advantages in terms of getting under guys' pads, but it also creates an issue with length and not getting off blocks. But I think the 248 pounds and the way he impacts people when he hits them, that measures up to me. But again, just 6'1", and the arm length is probably a part of that that's most applicable as well. 32 and 3/8 inch arms, which limits a little bit of what a rusher can do in the push-pull aspect. But man, he has definitely learned how to use what he has, and a big part of that is just outworking people. Brugler at The Athletic writes that he relies a little bit too much on effort over technique, but again, that's what we have coaches for, right? I think Ryan Crow is very well thought of down here, and he's going to get the most out of these guys. The last thing, he didn't drop in coverage in college at all, and we know that in the past, Chubb and Phillips and those guys have done that here. We'll see what happens with Coach Weaver's defense, but he just doesn't have the experience doing that on tape so far. So there's always work to do. No player is a complete product, and a fifth-round player will certainly have work to do, just as any rookie does coming into the league. But there's something to be said about the college reps he has, because he seems to be perfectly in tune with his body, like the control of his body to stay on balance and know where his next move is going to be. It really helps him measure out his steps, accelerate, decelerate. I'm a fan of this player. Let's go ahead and take a quick break right there. Come back on the other side, talk about the fit here in Miami. We'll hear from Muhammad Kamara and some more from McDaniel and Chris Greer. That's all next. Drive Time Podcast, your host, Travis Wingfield, brought to you by AutoNation.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now, you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
How does Muhammad Kamara fit in the Dolphins defense under new defensive coordinator Anthony Weaver? Well, let's go ahead and get into that right here. I just love when you see the theme or the plan or of how to build this team kind of come together here. And again, from Brugler's draft guide, he was described by coaches and teammates as a no-nonsense player who inspired his teammates with his intense work ethic. I asked him about that in his introduction press conference to the South Florida media.
Make practice super, super hard so, you know, the games are easy. You know, be relentless in practice so when you get to the games, it's, you're just letting yourself free, you know. Fail, succeed, mess up in practice so when you get to the game, it's easy and you know you just, you know, doing what you have to do. So that's just how I look at it. So I'm always going to be relentless in practice. That's just how I am.
And there was a follow-up about him talking about falling to the fifth round, and he wasn't bashful at all about how frankly, pissed off he was that he went that late in the draft.
Man, to be honest, I'm very excited, but I also am very, very angry going the round that I did. That's just my personality. I knew I could have went higher and I wanted to go higher, but you know, the lovely team of Miami picked me up, and I'm going to give them that burning desire. You know what I mean? I have a chip on my shoulder. So it just got even greater, you know? So everybody else, all 31 other teams, look out, because the way I'm about to play against these guys, you should have picked me before. You know what I mean? That's just the type of person I am. So, you know, respect to those guys. And, you know, I'm grateful for Miami for picking me up. But I know what I'm going to bring to the field, and every other team has to see me.
I mean, it's just across the board, guys who were doubted, like our own head coach, right? You can't coach because you're too small or whatever. Guys that love football, guys who embrace the grind, guys who are high character. I know I say this a lot, but I can attest to it being here. This group of players that embraces people in the organization, from the podcaster to the videographers, to the kitchen staff, the custodial staff, Kamara just kind of has that same vibe that, to me, tracks. As far as on the field, I think it was pretty clear that Miami needed to replenish the youth and development aspect of that edge position group. Again, you know, Quentin Bell and Zeke Vanderberg, the only guys on the roster that are not Chubb and Phillips, who are 28 and 25 years old by the time the season kicks off. But beyond that, it was Shaq Barrett, 31, when the season kicks off. Then Cam Good, who's 26. And, you know, they just needed more youth in that position. So they get Kamara after getting Chop Robinson. And all of a sudden, this room is full. It's deep. And speaking of Chop, Kamara did tell us that he worked together with Chop Robinson the entire draft process. So that's cool. They already have that pre-existing relationship heading into their rookie seasons here in South Florida. And Chris Greer also alluded to the fact that Kamara was a little bit salty on his Zoom call. You just heard it there, talking about going in the fifth round, and said that was part of the makeup they loved about him. Let's go ahead and hear from the Dolphins brass on this fifth round edge draft pick.
We were kind of surprised he was there. It's just how physical and how fast. And I mean, the guy has a tremendous motor. And I think someone showed us a quote.
He's a big Mo Kamara guy, I can tell. Yeah. That was the setup I told you so tweet right there.
But it was just, you know, when you watch him play, you know, he just plays hard. And he's kind of a relentless, his motor, and just loves football. And someone showed Mike and I some quote he was talking about after with you guys. And you feel that passion in him. Just like, this guy loves football, and he's very prideful, and he feels he's better than some people that were selected in front of him. And he made it known, and he's very excited to be here, that we took the chance on him.
Some numbers for you on Mo Kamara. 30.5 career sacks is the second most in Colorado State history. His 45.5 tackles for loss were third most in school history. He also forced 5 fumbles and had 180 total tackles. He was All-American last year and Mountain West Defensive Player of the Year. He played the following snap totals the last 3 years: 2021, 373, 2022, 595, and then he played 612 snaps last season. That includes 14 sacks on 342 pass rush snaps last season. He earned a 99 grade from Pro Football Focus on pass rush versus true pass set grades, non-play action, and also in critical moments was the number one graded pass rusher in fourth and third downs as well. Also scored a 95 grade in pass rush win rate. He was tied for fourth in the country in sacks. He was tied for 10th in QB hits with 12. He was ninth in hurries with 38. He had 21 pass rush wins listed as other, giving him 64 total pressures on 342 pass rush reps. That's a pressure rate of 18.7%. Pretty damn impressive to come away with those guys. We also got a few more players on this Saturday, the final day of the 2024 NFL Draft. Malik Washington, the receiver from Virginia. I can't say enough good things about him. I think he's the best pick of the entire draft for the Dolphins. I think he's going to come in and have an impact right away. More on that on the next podcast here. Patrick McMorris from California, the safety. Need to watch some more tape on him, which I will do this weekend before we get to the Monday podcast. And then seventh round pick was Taj Washington, the receiver out of Southern Cal. So again, two more receivers added to the team. There are some West Coast guys as well. So we'll have all that for you guys on Monday. Let's go ahead and finish up with this, though, from Chris Greer and Mike McDaniel. They were asked about the idea of being this competitive team that can win games and coming off of two playoff seasons in a row. But how do you measure up this analysis on the outside saying that both Chop Robinson and Patrick Paul are not yet ready to play. How do you balance in that, and how's that mindset play out? I love these answers from both Greer and McDaniel.
Well, we don't really worry about what other scouts and other people say. It's about dealing for the Miami Dolphins and how we feel, where the player is at this stage and what he needs to do to develop as a player and what he can contribute and do. And we're always talking about how we think the player fits in and what he can contribute this year, possibly. You know, there's no guarantees or absolutes, but we feel strongly in the players and believe in them. And this isn't, you know, we're still trying to win this year. This is not about worrying about 2-3 years down the line. This is, we're all about having the best team possible to win games this season.
Yeah, and just because the player has an upside, you know, that the we had a very deliberate approach to the entire draft on getting guys on the team that would compete and make us better right now. And, you know, some guys are determined by other people that they have a higher ceiling or whatever. We just get the guys in the building and let them prove that themselves.
Man, what a fun weekend. And I have more tape to go back and watch on these Patrick McMorris and Taj Washington, so I'll go ahead and do that for you guys before the next podcast. But fired up to bring that to you guys. I think Monday morning is my aim on the release of that one. We'll also go ahead and I think Wednesday have a holistic look at the draft and roster, kind of a roster reset series here. So plenty to come your way from this draft. We'll also have the UDFA podcast with Emory Hunt that we do every single year when those signings happen. Probably going to do a mailbag here in the near future as well. So just want to do some more deep dives akin to the thread I put on Twitter, also looking at the offensive line developmental timelines, like things like that we're going to do on the podcast. It's a fun time of year. And by the way, rookie minicamp and OTAs, player pressers, like it's all coming up here, and football is going to be on the menu for the next couple of weeks. And we're going to have you covered as always right here on the Drive Time Podcast. In the meantime, that is going to be my time. You all please be sure to subscribe, rate, review, follow on social at Wingfield NFL, follow the team at Miami Dolphins. Check out the Fish Tank podcast with Seth and Juice. And if you guys had a chance to watch, I think it was the fifth round draft choice. Maybe it was Jalen Wright. I forget where it was. The International Fan of the Year learned English or helped his English by listening to the Fish Tank podcast. Pretty damn cool to see that happen. So shout out to Seth and OJ. And what a great job they did at the draft party with me on the radio, just holding things down there for 4 hours on draft night one. So check out the Fish Tank podcast. Check out the YouTube channel for media availabilities, Dolphins Today, and so much more. And last but not least, MiamiDolphins.com. Until next time, fins up. Caroline and Cameron, I haven't seen you guys much at all the last 3 days, but I am coming home. Yeah.